This is Playing Around with Paige Renee.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Playing Around. I'm your host, Paige Renee. We have Teddy G here as always. I mean, we're going to talk about the Masters this entire time. I'm sure there's so much to talk about, but did you have a good weekend?
I had a good weekend. It could have been a better weekend. I'm experiencing complete Masters hangover right now. I feel like this is National Google Sports Day where I'm Googling, okay, you know, when do the NHL playoffs start? When do the NBA playoffs start? When does the NFL draft take place? Like, what's next? But it was a good weekend, but we were kind of devoid of drama, and most of my Masters picks whiffed. So yeah, it could have been better. How about you?
I had a bit of a rough night yesterday, and maybe there wasn't drama in the tournament, but I was experiencing a lot of drama on social media, and it was something I have never endured in my life. Like, of course I get hate all the time and I'm used to that, but I have never been called a racist before, and it like shook me to my core. Like, I was a mess last night. I honestly couldn't handle it. It was something that was so bizarre to me. And I'll read the tweet that kind of started all of this. So Hideki Matsuyama ended up winning the Masters, which was awesome. The first time a male has won a major in Japan. Huge deal. And so I said, the menu for the champions dinner is going to be absolute fire next year.
How are you racist? How dare you say you like Japanese food?
I was shocked, absolutely shocked. People were comparing me to Fuzzy Zeller. And if any of you guys don't know what happened, Fuzzy Zeller made a remark about Tiger Woods serving fried chicken and collard greens at the champions dinner. Or in quote, he said, or whatever those people like to eat. So yeah. That was, to compare me to that, was honestly so unbelievable. Like, I am so sensitive to different cultures and people, and I would never ever say anything to be insulting to someone else. And, you know, it is common knowledge that every year the winner creates a menu to honor where they're from. It doesn't matter where it is. And especially in Japanese culture, that is so important. And I would think that Hideki would want to honor Japan by serving Japanese food at the champions dinner. And again, people were just, I seriously like broke down in tears because I couldn't handle it. It's so scary these days because cancel culture is so real, and you never know what's going to be the tweet or something that you say that's going to get you canceled. And I've seen this before with, you know, other people in the golf industry who have said something with, you know, maybe the right intentions and it came off wrong, or someone didn't, you know, understand the comment, and then they're canceled and they lose everything. And it's like, yeah. I can't believe, and in that second, I was like, I can't believe I might lose everything just because I said I like Japanese food. Like, what the fuck?
So a few thoughts on that. And like, I'm friends with a Chicago broadcaster, and he called an African-American player a thug, and he got like massive shit for it. And it's interesting because like he and I are, well, he's older than I am, but like Bill Laimbeer was a thug. There were white players who were thugs. There were black players with a thug, but now you really, I guess, can't call anyone a thug, especially an African-American. Okay. So that was, he got into some trouble for that, but this one was so innocuous. So I had the absolute same thought as you, Paige, after Matsuyama won. Like, I loved Tiger's menu, you know, after he won recently, because it was fajitas and it was like some great fancy sushi rolls. And then I was thinking about Matsuyama. So I've spent a little bit of time in Tokyo. I was covering the Cubs. And I mean, if you could give me a surf and turf of Kobe beef and whatever exotic sushi they have.
It's amazing. Japanese food is the best.
The best. So I went through, I saw that you were upset on Twitter. So I went through your replies, and it's just typical. It's like people who are just, I don't mean to get into name calling, but just like fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Like the guy who thinks is going to be fire means you're saying Japanese food is spicy, and he's trying to correct you by saying, no, it's Thai food is spicy. Because he doesn't know what the expression means, is going to be fire. Now, I didn't see the other ones, but I saw a lot of people saying, guys, you know, these replies are ridiculous. So I was upset that you were upset. I wish you could brush it off and just attribute it to a bunch of, you know, stray morons, but it sucks that they got to you.
It was just something that has never happened to me before. And again, to be called a racist by someone is something that I take so seriously.
Right.
And it's something that, you know, I try to fight so much in my daily life because I have a group of diverse friends. And it was just something that I was like, I can't believe someone would ever stoop to that level to call me something when there's actual like hate crimes happening all around the world. And I'm getting called a racist because I said something positive about Japanese food. It was just, again, one of the most outrageous moments in all of my time on social media. And it almost like ruined the Masters for me because last night I was just so consumed with all of that. And the worst part was, like you were saying, they're just trolls and they didn't mean it. But to like so like say that so easily to someone else when it like truly affects me so deeply. And I had someone DM me and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I called you Fuzzy Zeller. It was a joke. And I'm like, that's not a joke. Like, yeah. I don't take that lightly. And that could like ruin my life by just insinuating that I am like that. Like, people just don't think through when they're trying to troll. Like, I will troll on social media and I feel like I can take it. But when it comes to cancel culture, like I said, it is just very scary that we live in this world where you have to be so particular with what you say or you're going to get canceled. Like, it's not fair at all. And it really, really sucks.
So it reminded me of an episode of The Office in the first season, Diversity Day. Yeah. And hopefully you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So Michael has no idea like what's insensitive and what isn't insensitive. So he's dealing with Oscar, and I think Oscar refers to himself as a Mexican. And Michael's like, hey, you can't say that. He's like, but I am Mexican. That's not offensive. But then Michael doesn't think it's insensitive if he's like imitating an Indian person. So finally, Kelly smacks him in the face. So it's a little bit like that. People now, they don't understand what is offensive and non-offensive. It's not offensive to say, I love Japanese food. You're not like, you know, blaspheming white culture then because you're not also saying, I love American food. I wish you could just let those idiots hit that mute button and that block button, but I know it bothers you.
Again, and I do too. And I feel like I've been so good lately with just letting everything just like roll off my back and I don't even care about it. But again, this one was just something that really, really like cut me pretty deep. And it was scary. Like, again, it was like I could lose everything in a minute of seconds just by a tweet that was interpreted wrong. And that's like so hard to take when I put so much effort and care and thought into everything that I put out there on social media. And I would never, ever want to say anything offensive. And clearly this was not offensive at all, but it was almost like concerning how many people thought it was offensive and people they don't really know what to say and what not to say. So have you seen Ugly Delicious on Netflix?
Have not.
It's an amazing doc where they talk about food tied into culture and tied into racism. It's amazing. So if anyone is a little confused on my tweet or why it was not considered racist and what Fuzzy Zeller is, go watch that doc. And that's something that it's amazing. They have two seasons of it. It's one of my favorite docs on Netflix. And if you love food, you're going to love it as well too. So definitely go check that out. But let's move past that. I'm going to take a deep breath. And let's just get right into the Masters because it was an interesting one. I'm on the fence because everyone was saying it was boring, but I don't think it was boring because I think we were so spoiled with the 2019 Masters that like nothing is ever going to live up to that. But I think that's what we always think of when we think of the Masters now and like that moment, which was one of the most incredible sports moments in history. And now we're just kind of like, well, now what? What do we do now?
Well, we've had so many great ones, and I've talked about this, but when I covered them from 2009 to 2019, it felt like every year was close and dramatic, or at least quirky, like the Danny Willett year. But, you know, you had Adam Scott winning with that dramatic putt and extra holes. You had Bubba Watson with that unbelievable gap wedge from the pine straw. Mickelson's wins were cool. Of course, Tiger in 2019. So it almost always, like Sergio, the guy who certainly I never thought would win a Masters. So they've been so good that the spoiling is true. I mean, obviously, Dustin blitzed everybody in November. I think we were just so grateful to have golf at that point that we wouldn't have dared complain about the finish, even though it wasn't close. And then Matsuyama was just so much better. It's so funny, Paige, how people will look back on it 5 or 10 years and be like, oh, he won by one shot. must have been tight. But there was only like 5 minutes of drama on Sunday, or, you know, maybe a little more than that. So on number one, when he sprays it way right on his drive, so he gets into some early trouble. And then Xander almost holds it out on 15. But then, you know, Matsuyama makes a six, salvages something on 15, scratches out a bogey. And then your boy Xander, what was up with the tee shot on 16?
He's a joke artist. I mean, I mean, you have to call it like it is. He never seems to seize the moment. He had a perfect opportunity to stick it close. The momentum was all shifted towards him after 15. And if he stuck that shot within, you know, 10 to 5 feet, I think he had a really good shot to at least get into a playoff. But I mean, hit in the water. It's not even like he hit the middle of the green and had, you know, like a 30 footer. He like fucking dumped it in the water. It's like, what are you doing? And then his next shot wasn't that much better either. And it's just like, what? It was the same thing that happened on 17 at TPC Scottsdale in the waste management, where there was so much room right. And so he could have bailed out as far right as he wanted to. And then he snap hooks it into the water. And then same thing on the par three too. It's like, you have so much green. Water was not even in play. Like, I don't think people realize how terrible of a shot that was. That was not even a missed club. I mean, he completely mishit it to hit in the water.
What was odd too, I mean, I thought he did extremely well in his post-tournament interview. You know, he wasn't pissy. He was upbeat. I mean, he apparently, after he swung, he told his caddy, "I flushed it," which is doubly weird because, as you say, the water is really not even in play. And the pin on Sunday, it is there for the taking on number 16.
He hit an 8-iron, too. It's not like he's hitting like a 4 or 5-iron. Right. He hit an 8-iron.
Yeah. I mean, that was a bad moment. And when he finally holds it out for triple, and Jim Nantz says that's his first triple in all of his major competition in his career. He had never made worse than a double, and literally on the biggest hole of his life on what is, you know, a par three where you should really never make worse than a three on Sunday. He did, man. He gagged. It was ugly.
Well, and I thought it was interesting that Dottie Pepper was like, you know, he's known for not, you know, rising to the occasion, but this time it was just a bad shot at the wrong moment. I'm like, that's what choking is. It's hitting a bad shot at the right moment. I mean, it's like, what are you doing? Like, of course he choked. He didn't pull off the shot when he needed to. And I don't know. I feel like this one's really going to stick with him for a while. I said that about waste management. And again, it's like, he just can't pull it off when it matters. And that separates the good players from the great players.
He and Tony Finau are kind of the same guy right now. They're so skilled. They hit it beautifully. They are, you know, you feel like you can pick them for a top 10 or even a top 5 anywhere they tee up, and you're probably going to get cashed out. Like Finau, there's a really good stat. He has made the top 10 in, I believe, 8 of his last 12 majors. Like, that's an amazing accomplishment. Yeah, T10 in last 8 of 12. Xander is close to that, where you know they're going to, you know, they're going to be in the mix. But then you also know they're not going to win, and nobody wants that rep.
I think the difference between Tony and Xander is Tony is a streaky putter. And so he doesn't really choke in the big moments. He just doesn't make the putts he needs to make. But he does that all week long. It's not like he's, you know, making everything Thursday through Saturday and then Sunday he's not making anything. We even saw him during the Masters miss some short putts. It's like he misses so many putts throughout the entire week that he should be almost winning by like 5 shots, but he just doesn't putt well. Xander, incredible ball striker, is hitting bad shots under pressure. I think that's where the difference is, where it's like not Tony's not just like, you know, snap hooking into the water or, you know, chunking a wedge in the water. You know, he just isn't making putts. Xander is full out, like, choking.
But Tony, like, handed the Genesis to Max Homa in the playoff.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's true. In my mind, I was like, he definitely chunked that shot on 18. But, like, hopefully Tony doesn't remember that because I'm making such a great point right now.
That was Max Homa knocking on Tony's door and saying, "Sir, are you interested in winning the Genesis? Because I've missed a 3-footer on the 72nd green, and I've hit a poor shot in the playoff. And would you like to have this victory for me?" And Tony saying, "Nah, you can take it."
That's true. I will say on Sunday, though, no one really rose to the occasion except for Will Zalatoris. I think he played much better than everyone expected him to play. He first time playing at the Masters. I think he's like the feel good story of the week. Everyone's rooting for him now. It was fun to watch him play so solid for four rounds and never falter. Cause I mean, not going to lie, I was like, he's probably going to shoot like a 75 higher on Sunday.
His putting philosophy, stroke, everything scares the hell out of me. I don't know what is happening when he's got that putter in his hand. But he looks good. He's got a fun name. He's American. He's fun in interviews. He hits it a ton. He's a string bean. So, you know, for people like you who don't like Bryson and think that a proper golf body is still kind of like sinewy, he was great to watch. And then Jordan was amazing from his approach on nine on. I mean, he was just pouring in birdie after birdie after birdie. Didn't get it done on 18, but he had an amazing like nine hole stretch there. Just fell short, broke a lot of hearts, including mine.
Oh man. I mean, I always want Jordan to play well because I do like Jordan. He's good for golf. And I think if he won the Masters, then I mean, it would have been a massive story. But at the same time, I said that he was not going to win and he didn't win. So I feel pretty good about that.
Oh, please.
I would rather be right than see someone be successful, okay?
Yeah, the guy was finished like fifth and you're claiming victory because you said he wasn't back yet. I mean, if he's not back, he is this close to being back.
Yeah. What do you think was missing with this year's Masters? And we were trying to talk about this on the live stream that we did yesterday. Because it wasn't that boring. I mean, it did come down to, you know, the last couple holes. It was kind of close there for a little bit. Hideki winning is a massive story for Japan. He seems like such a genuine, nice guy, and he was so happy. You could just tell that this meant so much to him, and just the pressure that probably just is off his back now. I mean, he was carrying like, I mean, it's so much pressure. He's a massive superstar over in Japan. And for the be the first male winner is incredible for him. But it just didn't have that spark.
It didn't. And on the pressure point, like, think about it. That's one when Sergio won, finally having won his first major after being like, you know, one of the most talented players to come out of Europe in decades. When Phil won for the first time there. So, I mean, you've had moments like that and you feel happy for him because you don't want to be a great player who's never won a major. There's so many of those. And when that's the major, they've accomplished something. Nobody can take away that green jacket for the rest of your life. But Paige, I think it was two things. It was probably fewer spectators, fewer patrons there, but really it was just the lack of, you know, sizzle at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, Hideki, when he came out of the break on Saturday, the weather delay after spending his time playing games on his phone. I think that's going to be my move forever now. I'm not going to hit balls or practice or anything. He just strangled the life out of the tournament. He was too good. And then, right, the guys who we expected to step up early on Sunday didn't. And at one point, wasn't it like a five-shot lead? It's hard to
– Yeah.
It's just hard to be excited. Even betting wise, you know, you're looking at it and you're like, all of a sudden, like on points bet, the outright winner, Hideki's minus 2000 and Will Zalatoris is like plus 1400. So 14-1, it's like, how do you get excited betting any of this? So that's just happens sometimes in sports, man, where one guy is just so much better than the field, just like sucks the life out of it.
I really miss Tiger. I think even when he's in the field, he just makes it a little bit more interesting. I miss Brooks too. I mean, Brooks missing the cut. We had a lot of big names miss the cut. We had Jason Day at plus 9, Patrick Cantlay, which was a huge surprise to me, at plus 8, Rory McIlroy at plus 6, Brooks Koepka at plus 5, and Dustin Johnson at plus 5. So a lot of huge names missed the cut. Yeah. Why do you think none of them have been playing all that solid lately?
The Cantlay thing was definitely the most baffling. I mean, a lot of smart people liked him to win top 5, top 10, to lead the tournament on Thursday because he's a great first round guy. I have no idea why he would shoot what he shot. That was, you know, baffling. Dustin, you know, I think didn't shock us just because he hasn't been playing well. And, you know, yeah, he withdraws from as many tournaments as he finishes top 20. Rory is just confused right now. I feel like he's in golf jail. He doesn't know where the ball's going. So that completely sucks. And he's probably questioning himself. So there were a few, yeah, that takes away. Brooks, you felt like, right, he was either going to win or do terribly. And it was, he did pretty terribly.
He looked like he was in so much pain. I don't even know why he played. I mean, he was in a water hazard and he had to climb like up the hill, and he had almost had to have his caddy like drag him up the hill. I mean, he couldn't move. He like literally couldn't walk. I didn't know if he was trying to have like a Tiger Woods US Open moment, you know, right. But I just felt like why go play if you're going to do more harm to your body? He's still young, and that could have potentially like ended his career if he tweaked it a wrong way.
Wow. Well, because all he cares about is the majors. So now he can, he doesn't have to worry for another like 5 weeks until the PGA Championship comes up. Also, I guess he was showing off that bright pink hat. What did you think of that hat there?
I love when guys wear pink. I think pink, well, pink's my favorite color. But I liked it. I liked the whole matching pink outfit. I think he pulled it off.
I think I used to like the pink that like Ian Poulter wears.
I like the pastel pink. Yeah.
Yes. More than the, you know, riding around in a bicycle in Manhattan and wearing a bright pink hat so nobody hits me with their car. That's what that pink hat felt like to me.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about just like lack of superstars. When we see Will Zalatoris, you know, play so well, is he the next big American star?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's joined in this group now with like Colin Morikawa, and I don't know, is Matthew Wolf still in this group or is he no longer in this group?
We got to talk about Matthew Wolf this week with
what happened with
a DQ, which was very odd. He signed an incorrect scorecard, which is something that should never happen when you're in the pros. You know how to count. You know what you're doing, and you also have your caddy double checking it as well. Most of the time, the guys will have their caddy, and then most people don't realize this is how it works. So when you're playing a tournament, you do this from junior golf, college golf, every tournament that you're in, it's the same process, even amateurs. You go in and you read the score off one by one, and your playing partner has to say like, yes, 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 yes for all of them. So you pretty much at that point, you've triple checked it, and then you send it over to the scorer who's in there. And then they again will say, you know, like 30, 40, you know, 70. And then you have to go, yes, that's correct. So at what point was he like, you know what, that's not right. So automatically you think, did he cheat? Did he try to cheat? Did he not want to play? Did he try to purposely get himself DQ'd? Because there's no way that you should sign an incorrect scorecard at any point in your career.
So often the incorrect scorecard is the other way.
Sign for one higher.
Yeah, because I think guys are so worried about the perception of cheating that somebody marks down a 5 instead of a 4 and you don't, you know, you just don't catch it. In this case, I mean, it really didn't matter. He wasn't even close to the cut line. Clearly, he wasn't trying to cheat, but it just shows, I think, an overall sloppiness. But can I tell you my favorite story along those lines, Paige? I don't think I've ever told you this one.
I want to hear it.
So I'm playing in a pro-am with Boo Weekly. This is like a bunch of years ago, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, what is Boo doing these days?
What is he doing these days? He's probably getting ready for, you know,
fishing,
run of the Supreme
and
Court.
And
yeah, no, I think he's probably, you know, getting his master's degree in criminology or something. He's a very, you know, he's a very learned guy. No, Boo is fun as fuck. I mean, total Southern boy. And
just, he's the best.
You know, just a good time, chill and all that. So we're on a green and Tiger spots him. And Tiger sees him, goes, "You're my hero." So he just kind of laughs it off. So I asked Boo's caddy, I'm like, what happened with Tiger? Why did he call him that? He said, well, said a few weeks ago, Boo was playing with Sergio Garcia. And because you keep the scorecard of your, you know, playing competitor, Boo had the wrong score for Sergio. Sergio didn't catch it. And Sergio got DQ'd. It gets even better. A couple weeks later, and actually, I think this was in the PGA Championship. It was a thing. A couple weeks later, they're playing together again, Sergio and Boo. And Boo again has the wrong score for Sergio. This time, Sergio catches it and remains in the tournament. But like, how quick was Tiger to be like, you're my hero, and they know exactly what he's talking about because he got Tiger's nemesis, Sergio, booted out of a tournament.
That's amazing. I have signed 2 incorrect scorecards in my entire career, and both of them for one shot higher than lower.
Oh, what happened?
So it was Silver Bell, and it was pouring rain, and my scorecard was pretty much like soaked and barely together. And I think I just couldn't see what it was, and I signed it. And then the other one was in a college event at Stanford, and I literally don't know. Like, I went through it, and I honestly think I thought I made a 5 instead of a 4. Like, in my mind, I thought I made a bogey, and I told them bogey, and I thought I made bogey, and then I realized, like, I actually didn't. I made a 4. But again, it doesn't matter. If you sign for one higher, you still got to play the next day, which is weird. So I got to ask you, if you sign an incorrect scorecard, whether it's lower or higher, should you be disqualified? Because I always thought it was weird that if you sign for one higher, you still sign for the incorrect score, even though it's not lower, it's still incorrect. So I think you should be DQ'd either way.
Do you? It's this, there's a moment in The Simpsons, there's a golf episode where I believe it's Tom Kite who's talking to Homer, and he goes, Homer, you know, the conventional way of cheating in golf is to lower your score. And Hook is Homer's so dumb that he doesn't get it. He probably thinks it's like baseball where the higher number is better. No, I like that if you sign for an incorrect scorecard, but it's the other way, you're reverse cheating. No, I think you should still be able to compete in the event. That's just incompetence and not truly cheating.
Yeah, my coach was not happy with me at the Stanford one. That was for sure, because I had the low score of the day out of my team. And then wasn't great. But those are the 2 times I've ever messed up. And again, it is weird because you don't even realize it until, you know, someone else catches it. Like, my parents were like, you definitely shot, you know, this score and not that score. And then my coach said the same thing. She's like, no, like, I walked with you the whole day. You definitely shot that. And I was like, no, like, I'm pretty sure I shot something different. So I don't know.
Real quick, was it a par 4, par 5? Like, what?
I don't fully remember. Clearly. It was a long time ago. I've had so many. It's weird. I remember, like, the really, really bad rounds, but everything else in between, I don't really remember all that much. Like, I played so many tournaments, so many junior golf tournaments, so many college tournaments, so many pro tournaments. After a while, it just kind of, like, blends into each other. But there are, like, a couple that, like, 3 or 4 tournaments in my entire career that stand out. And I remember, like, so vividly, for some reason, I was playing, they called them Niners. So it's like when I very first started playing, you know, there's 9 holes. And we used to have one of the parents be like our walking scorer for the day. And my dad did it. And this is probably like my 3rd or 4th tournament I've ever played in. And when I kept stepping up to the ball, and I kept touching it, like, the ball, like, would slightly move. And every time my dad would be like, that's a shot, Paige. That's a shot. Ooh. And then, but he wasn't calling it on other girls. And I, like, was so mad at my dad that day. And that was one of the tournaments that I remember so vividly to this, because he had this, like, stupid, like, Greg Norman, like, hat on. And I, like, remember what he was wearing too. And I just remember him, like, looking up, like, underneath the stupid fucking hat and being like, that's another stroke, Paige. Like, oh, it was... That was horrible.
So the straw hat, which, by the way, I think Greg looked great in. I think he pulled off the straw hat better than the baseball cap. But, and I think we'll get into this with Abraham Answer. You know, the golf rule that I find so strange, and I guess you're talking about how your ball moved. Like, if you lay your club right behind it, you're not touching the ball, but, like, you're touching the grass, and then your ball moves, like, the slightest bit and goes. I mean, give me a fucking break. I mean, why is that a penalty?
Yeah, Dad, why is that a penalty?
Greg Norman wannabe.
There's, like, so many moments with my dad in golf that were, like, so unpleasant. He used to caddy for me too, and we would just get into it, like, back and forth all the time. So he lost his caddying job, and my mom had to caddy for me. But yeah, let's get into the Abe Answer rules issue that he had, because it was bizarre. It was bizarre. So he grounded his club. They're calling it he grounded his club in the bunker, but they zoomed in, did it in slow motion. And as he was hovering, he brushed a little bit of the sand off, which you could not have seen.
No.
Far away, and you could not have seen from the naked eye, and also in real time. And it is bizarre to me that they ended up giving him a penalty for it, because why are we still zooming in and doing slow motion? It doesn't make any sense to me. He clearly wasn't trying to cheat. Wasn't a Patrick Reed situation where you could see him with like a fucking like shovel, literally, and from the naked eye, real time, like literally dusting.
Exactly.
There's like poofs of sand when Patrick Reed was doing it. And that was something that really bothered me with this, was because everyone was coming to Abe's defense. People were like, well, why wouldn't you do this if it's Patrick Reed? Because Patrick Reed is blatantly cheating. Like, you can see him cheating in the bunker. He's literally brushing sand away. This is a completely different situation.
Yeah, for the 37th time.
Yeah,
Patrick Reed gets no benefit of the doubt, whether it's an embedded ball or a fairway bunker. We know what he's up to.
Yeah,
I consider myself, Paige, to have pretty good eyesight. I watched that video 4 times, and I really couldn't see any sand move. Obviously, other people could.
And the zoomed in slow motion one, too. I couldn't see it the first time. I watched it probably like 3 times, and I was like, what are they even looking at?
What are they talking about? Stuff like that is just pure fucking garbage. I don't get it. If they zoomed in on every single bunker shot of every single player during every tournament, how many guys would get penalties and women would get penalties? What are we doing here? That was upsetting, in part because I had a little action going on answer. And seriously, like, for the, you know, now that golf betting is such a big deal too, you really want to go through that and scrutinize every single shot and see when a ball's sitting up. Remember John Rahm got that penalty near a green a couple years ago? And just stop with that. Can we have some common sense? Like, it seems like there's some common sense rules back in golf now in terms of, you know, optionally the flag stick in. And like, I was honestly unclear after Justin Rose missed that putt that you're allowed to then tap down on stuff into your putting line. Like, that to me looked a little weird. Why would you allow players to do it right in their line? But that's allowed now. So I'm always confused on what's allowed and what's not allowed.
So what was the difference? Because I'm still a little confused with the whole situation. Why did he end up getting the penalty shot, even though he said he didn't purposely do it? But this happened with Patrick Reed, and he said he didn't purposely do it, and then they didn't end up calling a penalty shot. So why did Abe end up getting the penalty shot and Patrick didn't?
I don't understand it at all. I was looking at it, I'm like, did somebody call this in?
Yeah, that was also confusing too, because I thought someone called it in, but apparently they also changed that rule in 2019. This is stupid because no one knows what the rules are anymore, because they keep changing them so many times. But okay, so I thought in 2019, it was you can't call in after the round was completed. So that's what I thought they changed the rule to, because this happened with Lexi Thompson when she finished.
Yes.
And then someone called it in, and they then decided that they're going to assess her a penalty. So that's why I thought they changed it. But now they're saying that you can't call in at all. So I literally don't know the rules. If you ask me even like how to take a drop from a hazard now, I don't even know. Is it still the same as it was before? Because like, they changed these rules, and they're rules that like don't even matter. They don't even matter. Like, it's so stupid.
How about this? I wish I could remember the player. Oh, I think this is when they were showing on Saturday the replay from 2019. All right, so Molinari rinses his shot into Ray's Creek on number 12. His drop was like 20 yards left of the line where his shot went in the water. I was just watching this. I'm saying, why is he allowed to drop so far left? I thought it was 2 clubs and no closer and on the line. And so, yes, I mean, here we are. I'd like to think I know more golf than 99% of people out there, and the rules still baffle me.
I mean, I played competitively. It was my responsibility to know the rules, and I still don't. I don't understand them now. And again, it's like they keep changing them. It's like, okay, we're not going to drop shoulder length. We're going to drop from knee length. No one wants that. No one ever asked for that. No one was ever like, you know what, USGA? You know what? I don't want to drop from my shoulder anymore. I want to drop from my knee. No one in the history of ever has ever written in and asked for that. No one's asking for that.
I think they should go back to how it was like decades ago. Do you notice that they used to drop it over your shoulder without looking?
I mean, before you know, it's going to be like underneath your, you know, underneath your legs, like two fingers. Like they're going to change the rule again. I'm sorry for everyone listening to this with headphones because I am getting so heated and mad about this because it's so fucking dumb. And this is why people don't want to get into golf. It's like, why do you make the rules more complicated over and over and over again when there's things that we're actually asking for and we want changed in golf? And it's not just rules. It's like other things as well. It's like they change the things that don't matter to anyone at all. It's like, how dumb are you guys to like not figure it out? There's so many smart people.
The two I'm big done. Changes that came to like, I know, is the rant over?
Yeah, I'm done.
All right, give me one more second. Like for when I play recreationally, I love the fact that it seems like there's no out of bounds anymore. If you, or really for a lost ball, like you can't find your ball. We've got some sanity involved here. Get close to where it was, take a drop, add a penalty. There's still always debates in my group. Like, do you have to drop it in the rough? Do you have to drop it two clubs? What if you're behind a tree? Can you drop it in the fairway? I mean, that stuff hasn't been settled yet, but at least you don't have to re-tee, you know, and basically hitting your third shot. And then it is good that you can leave in the flag stick, especially like during COVID. That was huge when nobody wanted to touch anything. Beyond that, absolutely, Paige. I have lost contain. I still don't know what the hell the rules are. And of course, they're different for the pros versus me.
You know what's another stupid fucking rule, too? This one really bothers me. So you hit a ball that you think might be lost or just in, you know, you're not sure if you can find it or not. Not even talking about OB. Just you don't know if you can find it or not. And then you hit a provisional. You then find your original golf ball.
Right.
You then don't have an option to then hit your provisional because you found your golf ball.
Sure.
So then your two options are to take a drop or go back to the tee. But you already hit the provisional. Why do you have to go back to the tee to hit another shot if you found your golf ball? Like, why? That makes no sense to me. It's like, okay, I'm going to go walk back all the way and hit another tee shot when I just hit another tee shot that's in the fairway or wherever it is. That is such a stupid rule. If you hit a provisional ball and you still find your ball and you don't want to play it, you should have the option to play your provisional.
It is a funny concept that sometimes players don't want to find their ball.
Exactly.
Like, let's say they're in match play and their opponent hit one super shitty also. You don't want to find your first ball because it might be in a worse spot than where your provisional is. That is an interesting quirk.
That's a stupid rule. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some anger issues and some other interesting tidbits of the Masters. Do you have anger issues on the golf course?
Occasionally. So my wife gets on me for anger issues in the car. I've really tried to lower my road rage, but certainly my kids have heard me be like, you fucking idiot. Oh, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
So they've heard me do that a lot. I only get mad on the golf course if I'm having a really good round and I completely fuck up a hole. You know, so like most rounds, I feel like I'm really only satisfied how I play maybe one out of four, one out of five times. Other times I'm just like, all right, I'm going to shoot my 88 to 92 and maybe I'll try to make some money, maybe try to make a par or birdie down the stretch, whatever happens, happens. But there is that occasional moment. I've been known maybe once a year to helicopter a club. What about you?
I definitely have anger issues, which I think is pretty evident if you listen to the show and you just listen to our last segment. I get worked up so fast. Like, I'm either zero to like or 100. There is no middle ground for me. And so like I can be so cool, calm, and collected for such a long time, and then I just absolutely lose it. And I think it's intensified on the golf course. There's just something about golf that like eats at me, eats at my soul, and it just makes me so incredibly angry. So yes, I have thrown clubs, I have broken clubs, I am definitely on the Billy Horschel scale of anger on the golf course. I mean, we saw some guys get pretty angry out there. I mean, Billy Horschel put on an absolute show for us both Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's a new scale. It's zero to Horschel.
Zero to Horschel.
That was an amazing club slamming fit. Billy Horschel also had that moment where he slid down in his white pants and ended up on his Easter. I thought that was pretty cool. But what about Siwoo?
The most surprising turn of events is that Siwoo Kim has anger issues. I never saw that coming in a million years at all. He is like, he never shows any emotion. Never happy, never sad, never angry. And all of a sudden he just boop, snaps his little putter and he has to use a 3-wood for the rest of the round. Insane.
Of course, yeah, he putted beautifully with the 3-wood, way better than I would with an actual putter. It's so fun to see the guys when they putt with a 3-wood. But going back to yours, when you broke a club, was it in competition? And then did you, was it like an iron, or did you ever have to putt with a hybrid or something?
I've never done it in competition. I, in junior golf, I was kind of on the watch list because I would, I got mad watch a lot. List. Yeah. So, I would have one of like the rules official following me just to make sure I didn't have any like outbursts and throw my club. And I said, they would just be like, if you do that again, you're going to get kicked off. So I really had to watch it. And also like my parents didn't like when I would get angry and they said it was just unbecoming. So if I ever showed like that kind of emotion again, then I probably shouldn't be playing. So I tried to limit it in playing like in tournaments, but in practice, that's where I would like, I'd get really mad at it. And you know, so like Billy Horschel, when he gets mad, he smiles. When I get mad, I cry. Like any emotion that I experience that's into an extreme, I cry. So it doesn't help. I just look psychotic out there because I'm like mad and crying. And, you know, and Billy does the mad and like full on smile laugh, which might be a little creepier than the crying.
I only cry when I'm happy or when there's like something really emotional going on in a movie. I never cry when I'm pissed off. I was a decent tennis player growing up, and I think I grew up like watching John McEnroe and a little Bjorn Borg. Wow, aging myself. And my parents would always say Bjorn Borg had the worst temper and his parents took his racket away for a week when he like pitched a fit in a tournament. So they always held that over on me. I think actually I get angrier in tennis than in golf. Something just lends itself to when you get mad in tennis and you just want to throw that ball up and just whip it so hard against the fence. And then I think it actually helps sometimes. Like I read a study not long ago that when you drop a bunch of F-bombs or expletives, it actually can be good for you to like get it out and then you move on.
Do you wish that we had more of that in golf? Like, I love when Billy gets mad, and it was fun seeing Siwoo do that. Like, I love seeing the emotion, and I almost feel like it's frowned upon. You always see when Jon Rahm gets a little angry, and he doesn't get that mad. Like, he really doesn't get all that mad. And all the commentators are like, oh, I can't believe he did it. You know, the fiery Spaniard back at it again. And it's like, why are you doing that? Like, this is fun. This is entertaining. Like, this is, like, great. Like, why do you always want them to be little robots out there?
Yeah, I think they get into that like protective mode where they feel like they have to like protect the players and let's go away from this shot and show something else or else we're going to be mad at our broadcast team, which is crazy because, right, anything that humanizes these guys, I think, is good for the game. And yeah, there's so many golfers out there. A lot of guys struggle to distinguish themselves. So you want to have the ones that like completely run hot. And, you know, you want to have the volcanoes out there because certainly we have enough completely calm guys.
Yeah, I want all of the club throwing. I want yes. to see them breaking clubs. Like, I think that's the best thing ever when you just see them like snap the club snap. Over their knee. That is just so pleasing to watch them do that. And it makes them, like you're saying, more real. Like yeah. you can relate to that. I think anyone who has ever played golf has been at that point in a round where they are so incredibly frustrated. They just want to like snap a club over their leg.
So I saw one live that was, I will never forget, you know, the golfer Thomas Peters.
Yeah.
I think he's like Belgium. And I was just out at the Masters and just kind of roaming around looking for something to write about. So on 17, he has a bad three putt and then he goes to tee off on 18 and he's in one of the smaller groups. So there are maybe 15 people by the 18th tee. And he, you know, snap hooks one pretty bad way left. And he's walking off the 18th tee box, boom, driver over his knee. And to do it at Augusta National, I think everybody was just absolutely shocked. And I was like, oh, now I have to ask him about it afterwards because we're always looking for interesting notes and I'm yeah. the only media guy around here. So it's kind of a scoop. He was great talking about it afterwards, but when somebody does it at Augusta National, it's 10 times as shocking as any other tournament.
Were all the patrons just like,
looking around like, what did I just see? And of course, nobody can have it on video because nobody has their phones. So unless you literally saw it with your own eyes, you never get to see it.
What did he say after?
He was just great. He was just, yeah, he's probably like, not my best moment.
Yeah,
working
I did
on my
it.
Temper. Coach Small and Zoe's getting on me for that. That's the next step in my career, that kind of thing.
I've never seen it in person from another tour player. We had a girl on our team at U of A, and she was very fiery. And I will never forget this. I was walking with my assistant coach at the time, and we look over to the tee box, and we just see this girl just like full on like tomahawk her driver. Like she did this like over her head and like thrusted it down as hard as she could, and the driver just stuck into the grass. And my coach was like, I got to go handle that. And just like walked away. That was the first time I've ever seen someone like other than myself do something that insane.
Yeah. So my buddies were playing at a course out here called Harborside. And I wasn't with them last week. And on our text chain, they just said, had a moment of silence for you on number 10. And I had actually forgotten. But I think that was where I like, it's some awesome drive. And I'm like, you know, only 50 yards away and here come the chili dips. So they remembered, they were kind enough to remind me of when I blew up on that hole. Friends never forget that stuff.
No, always fun when like someone you're playing with gets a little mad too. It's a little awkward at first. Like, I think everyone's like, do we say something? Do we not right. say something? Like, do we laugh about it? Because like, yeah. I don't know.
What's the proper amount of time? Is it when the player, I think it's when the player holes out. I think yeah. that's the moment when you're allowed to start to hassle them.
I 100% agree. Something else I was excited to watch this week was Bryson not play well. That was something that I enjoyed. He struggled again at Augusta, which was expected. I'm still surprised that people were picking him to be an outright winner when he hasn't proven himself to be successful on this golf course. He only had one decent round and even par 67. If any of you guys remember, Bryson famously said that Augusta is going to play at a 67. That's what par is to him. Ever since he did that, he's only shot under par, I think, one time. And it was the 67 that he shot.
Yeah.
He just, again, can't get it done at Augusta. Is it because he's too boneheaded and then he doesn't want to change the way he needs to play Augusta? You know, if he needs to do it the right way. I mean, he could take three woods off the tee or irons off the tee all day long.
Yeah.
And I think he would have played it significantly better than he played it this last week.
You know, I watched him a ton on Thursday. They were showing a lot of his shots and he just kept his distance control sucked. I mean, he was just over the green constantly to back pins. So I don't know if it was a technical issue. Maybe he can't judge the wind properly. I have I don't understand it. Why isn't he playing to just the middle of these greens? Maybe he's not confident enough in his putting that he can make a 25 footer. So he's trying to stick it in there to 8, 10, 12 feet. That one was baffling. And then I didn't get to see, you know, much else. I know he had three putts in one round, because obviously that made me a winner on a points bet offering. So I'm sure it's a combination of a lot of things where he doesn't have access to his green reading book. And then he did admit afterwards that that was an issue. So it's just a place where course knowledge helps tremendously. Like we saw with Zalatoris at stretches, he had a couple three putts, I feel like, where he just didn't realize how uphill it was or how downhill it was. And, you know, I guess I'll give Bryson a break there. Although he's played it probably five times now, so he should have a better feel for it. It's going to dog him now. I mean, there are great players like Rory. I mean, yeah, Rory has not won at Augusta National, a place that should be awesome for a guy who it's towering, you know, high draws as a right-handed player. So those guys want that green coat so desperately. And until Bryson, you know, figures it out, man, it's going to dog him.
I don't think he'll ever be successful at Augusta without his green reading book. I think that is the biggest thing for him. He relies so heavily on having precise numbers and everything needs to be exactly the same week in and week out. And he's so reliant on that book. And when he doesn't have it, you can see that he's uncomfortable on the greens. And it very clearly shows when he's at Augusta. And I think they should ban green reading books at all courses, especially in majors. I think reading greens is an art, and that's what makes, you know, separates good putters from great putters. And it's a part of the game. And I think that having the books, it should not be allowed anymore, especially in majors. I like when they don't have them.
Yeah, I would lean to that too. I'm basically down for whatever prompts the guys to play more quickly. So would they play more slowly or more quickly if they didn't have the books? Would they be walking everything off and circling everything 200 times? Or what's your thought on that? How do you play faster?
Gosh, I mean, like you're saying, it could go both ways. I think sometimes they put so much into that book that they're just analyzing it the whole time. But on the flip side, they could now start second guessing themselves if they don't have the book, and it will take them twice as long to read the greens. At what point, though, it's like, can you not read a green?
Yeah.
Like you've been playing for almost all of your life and you can't read a fucking green. Like you're supposed to be a pro at this.
And you
have a caddy. Like it doesn't take that long. Like when I'm playing with a caddy and they tell me where to hit it, it speeds the process up so fast. And it's like, oh yeah, we're playing for millions of dollars. You don't understand. But it's like, read the green faster. It's like people in basketball or in football, you can't just like stand there forever and decide what play you're going to do. There's like a shot clock. Like you have to get things done in a certain amount of time. And so they've kind of messed with that on the European tour with having a shot clock with like their pre-shot routines, but that should really be a part of it. Like they need to do that.
I totally agree. I mean, whenever I'm playing with somebody and they're slow, I just start yelling floor. You know, like in a casino, or because that's what we do in poker when somebody's taking too long to make a decision. It's just like clock, you know, we don't have all day while we're young. I find Paige, this is an unscientific study, but like the longer people take on these putts, they almost
the worse
always miss them.
I 100%.
You know, if a guy starts taking longer than a minute, I'll watch and I'll just like actively root against them. And you know my powers of jinxing. So I will go ahead and jinx the player and they will invariably not only miss it, but like have a total misread.
Well, the longer you take, the more time for bad thoughts to enter your mind too.
Yes.
And I always tell amateur golfers that. I'm like, you don't need to analyze your shot the way that these pros analyze their shot.
No.
And it's different when you're hitting a approach shot because there are a lot of factors that come into play, especially at Augusta National, because the hills are so slopey. So you have shots like way above your feet, downhill, uphill, and you have to adjust for that. So it means you have to usually take different clubs and then, you know, the wind. That will take time, and I understand that takes time. As an amateur, doesn't matter. Like you're not playing courses like Augusta National, and you don't need to be as precise as they're hitting it as well. I mean, most of us are just lucky when we hit it straight. So just like get your yardage, grab your club, check the wind, and adjust. Like it should only take you probably like 15 seconds to do your whole process. And for green reading, it's simple. You just do maybe like the four corners, it should take you 30 seconds. Like, and you, and it should not take you long, especially like the short putts. It's like you're standing over it. The longer you take, the more it's like, oh, did I read that right? Did I not read that right? I'm going to miss it. It's like, no, if you step up and you play faster, you're just going to be focusing on the shot at hand and not about anything bad that's going to happen after.
Well, at the Paige Teddy Invitational, we are going to have shot clocks. Everybody is going to be playing in 3 hours and 15 minutes, and it'll be a sensational television.
Well, even with the final group with Xander and Hideki, they were a hole behind. Yeah. Which, why are they not pushing these players? And again, I get it. They're playing for a green jacket. Like, it's more important. Yeah. You can't rush them. But I think it's like an art to play fast. Like, that's a part of the game. You don't have endless time to just decide on your shots and figure things out. I think they need to, like, do something about it. And it's not fun to watch either when it's just, it goes on forever.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times where, like, the final group is put on the clock, and then usually when it's the USGA, everybody hammers the USGA. It's like, they're not holding anyone back. What are you doing? So I see both sides of that. I think in that case, you probably let the final group go because you've got this big TV window anyway. You've got to fill it.
Yeah.
We'd rather see those guys than, you know, than a remix of the Butler Cabin Green Jacket ceremony.
Oh, why is that so awkward and painful? Like, why can't
they
figure out?
That's what makes it so fun.
Oh God, it gives me like secondhand embarrassment. Like, I cringe. Like, I won't even watch it anymore because it just makes me so uncomfortable. It's like they do something where like the sound, it's like, I don't know. There's just something about it that makes me I get the chills watching it. I don't like it.
Get a warm blanket, Paige, because we're going to have that every year. I only watched some of it this year long enough to where Jim Nance asked this perfectly solid question to Matsuyama. And then he went through his interpreter and they went back. And I believe the answer was, it feels good.
Hey, I'll take that.
That was the end of the answer.
Short and sweet. I like that. Before we wrap up this segment, what was your biggest takeaway from the Masters this year?
Will Zalatoris suddenly comes to mind, but more so like Matsuyama. It's so big for Japan. It might be like the Tiger effect on that country, maybe even for like all of Asia. The Masters must love this. The folks who run the Masters are geniuses. They created this Asian amateur, I'm sure, with the idea one day that they would have a champion. Obviously, Japan is an incredible golf market with amazingly wealthy people and golf addicts. So now, as popular as the Masters was in Japan and Asia before, think about what it's going to be now. So I wanted Spieth to do great things. Justin Thomas fell on his face. We haven't talked about him. He was disappointing.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about that. Yeah. That just completely slipped my mind.
So there were a lot of guys who completely, not embarrassed themselves because it's golf and we all fuck up, but a lot of guys who probably did not sleep very well last night who had these prime opportunities. But hey, first major of the year, and let's hope you and I can see it live next year.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I would say my biggest takeaway, it felt like a leaderboard of the old, with Hideki playing well and Spieth up there and Justin Rose up there, which was exciting. I love seeing guys who have maybe traditionally struggled lately to come up and play so much better. But that, I totally forgot about Justin Thomas. I mean, he was everyone's favorite to win this tournament, and I thought he was going to give it a really good run on Saturday. Ends up shooting a 75 after a complete mental collapse on, was it 13?
13.
On 13. And just wasn't there.
What's up? Seriously.
Yeah, that was weird to see because he's always so focused in on what he's doing. And it just seemed like his mind was elsewhere and he didn't quite have the drive that he normally has.
And meanwhile, the guy who had a right to have his mind elsewhere was John Rahm, your guy. He arrives at the course Wednesday after becoming a new dad. And oh, my God, he played beautifully on Sunday. I mean, he was lighting it up and ended up, I think, finished fifth, which is a great accomplishment. Like, to me, he should probably be the favorite next year at the Masters going in. Whatever. Forget about DJ. Forget about Spieth. Like, the way John Rahm does it, this time without much prep, was incredibly impressive.
I agree with that. And he was my pick. So I'm glad he played well for sure.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really interesting Masters. Again, I think we just have to manage our expectations. Nothing's ever going to be like 2019. And it will continue to get better. I think once the world starts to get back to normal, then everything will start to feel a little bit more normal again. And I'd love to see all the patrons there and the cheers. And they mentioned that several times where, you know, the cheers weren't quite getting back to the players. And so maybe they didn't feel the stress as much, but love to be there next year. And hopefully we can do some live streams there. Exactly. But before we wrap up this episode, let's get into some TNA.
All right. So Paige, I think I want to ask you about this. People have been curious about what you do before a round of golf. I'm all over the map. I have no kind of good system. I'm usually shoveling McDonald's into my mouth. Probably not the best, but what do you do stretch-wise and eating-wise?
So now that I'm not playing competitively and I just play for fun, I normally just show and go. So I won't even warm up. I won't do anything. I'll just go to the first tee and I'll play. I play better that way because when I start to practice, I get in my head a little bit too much about it. Wow. And when I just step up, I have no expectations and I feel pretty good just going into it. When I was playing competitively, I had a routine down to the tee. It was the same every single time that I would show up at the golf course. I'd get there an hour and 15 minutes before. I would putt first, and then I would go and chip, and then I would head over to the driving range, and I would work through my bag. So I'd hit 56 wedges first, and then I would do my 56 degree wedge first, not 56 wedges first.
And then I know you're particular.
Not that particular. And then I would go 9 iron, 7 iron, 5 iron, 2 hybrids, 3 woods, driver, back to wedges, and then I would finish up by hitting just like 3 drivers going through my whole pre-show routine. After that, I will go to the putting green and I'll hit lag putts and then I'll finish up with short putts. I always try to finish off with like 10 to 20, three footers in a row. I have to make all of them in a row. And then I go to the first tee and I'm always there 10, 15 minutes before. That was my routine every single time that I played.
What about eating wise? What would you eat?
Normally for breakfast, I would get so nervous that it was hard for me to have an appetite. So I would normally just eat like eggs or oatmeal. And then before the round, my mom would feed me a banana basically. So she was always like, you have to eat, you have to stay hydrated. So she would always give me a banana before. And today, I don't think you didn't hear this story. I told this before you were part of the podcast. My mom used to feed me baby food, like actual baby food as snacks on the golf course. So
strained peas.
It's not like the mushy baby Gerber food. It was like, we had these like little, they're like little meat sticks basically, but they were really high in protein and they were easy to eat on the golf course. And so I would always eat those. So I always had a banana, those baby food, meat sticks and, like, I don't know, a protein drink or.
You were having apple squeezies.
I pretty much was like having baby food all the time.
The meat sticks are great. I mean, the jerky and all that, they're delicious.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great boost. But that's not baby food. That's like adult food.
No, it like had the Gerber baby on it. And it was like in the baby food section. Like we would go to the baby food section to get the meat sticks. But they were quite delicious. But that was my that was my routine in college. I would do a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So everyone on the team would just get peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Love PB&J.
But I was not a big like snacker or eater on the golf course. I really liked just, I could not eat. I couldn't get myself to eat because I was always so nervous, even throughout the round.
So let's go post game. And so let's put that, all right, you're out here in Chicago. We've had a great round. You kicked my ass. You've shot your 69. What is your ideal food and drink post round?
So definitely a hot dog, even a hot dog at the turn. There is like nothing better than a golf course hot dog. You have to do it. And even when I was playing tournaments, ice cream. Like I have to get ice cream after a round, good or bad round, we just get ice cream. Like, so that's something we would always do.
Well, that's adorable. A lot of the clubs out here make an art of the hot dog. So they do it, they split it. They grill both sides of it and they're really good toppings. You know, it's beyond just your like mustard or peppers are out here, Jardinera out here in Chicago. So maybe we'll go to a place like that that really takes pride in the dog, that also like toasts the bun and makes a whole thing of it.
But I can only eat my hot, I can only eat my hot dogs with ketchup.
Oof. That's a problem. Speaking of baby food.
I'm not a picky eater, but when it comes to like a hot dog, I think just like ketchup is.
I'll look the other way, Paige. Absolutely. Yeah. But you don't want to drink. You don't want to have ice cold beer after you play, huh?
No, I don't like the taste of alcohol. Like I said, like I would only drink to just get drunk, which is not a great philosophy. No one should do that. But I don't like the taste of, I don't like the taste of beer. I hate wine. I will never drink wine. I don't mind like a pina colada or something that's like fruity that I can't taste. But besides that, no, I'm not. I don't mind beer, but like beer just reminds me of like beer pong back in college. And anytime I get like a whiff of it, just reminds me of like dried beer on the floor from like bad college parties.
Yeah, I think you're trying maybe the wrong beer, but here's a drink I will propose.
Okay.
It is ginger, half ginger ale, half beer on the rocks.
What do you call that? Is there a name for it?
It's kind of a shandy, like I think there are different forms of that, a shandy or a shandy or something. And for some reason, I think it's best with Red Stripe beer. So like Red Stripe and ginger ale on the rocks. It's the perfect post-round drink on a hot day because you get some beer and you know, maybe that settles you down a little bit. You can drink a couple of them, two or three, and still drive because it's only half beer. And it's light beer, but you're still getting the sweetness and the ice. So that would be my rec.
Okay, I'll have to try that out when I go to Chicago.
Fantastic. Final question. Would you rather have a hole-in-one or a 400-yard drive?
Oh, a hole-in-one. 100%. Like, that is so special. No one is ever like, during a round of golf, have you ever driven it like 400 yards? No one ever asked that. The question is, have you ever had a hole-in-one before? So I don't think anyone would ever take the 400-yard drive. And then they'd be like, oh, was it downwind? Was it downhill? You get questioned about it, but a hole-in-one is a hole-in-one.
But I think I've seen Shaq drive at 400 yards. I think you were there to witness that moment, weren't you?
You know, I'm going to say this. This is the first time I've ever seen this with anyone. He hits it better with one arm than he does with two.
That was bizarre.
He honestly would not, he couldn't make contact when he had, his clubs were also just rentals from the golf course. And so they were for someone who was probably like, you know, 5'10" and Shaq is like 8 feet tall. So they were so short and the grips were so tiny that his hands were like wrapped around it like four times. But when he was trying to do two hands, he missed it every single, he couldn't even hit the ball. Like he wasn't even making contact. He was hitting like 3 feet behind it, but then he had one hand and he was crushing it like 200 yards.
What kind of world are we living in where like a man who's worth, I don't know, $500 million or whatever, who's, you know, 7 feet, 3'7", whatever he is, doesn't have customized golf clubs. Like that to me makes no sense. But Paige, I've played with a guy, just some like random guy who joined our group, and all of his short game shots were one arm.
One arm?
Yeah, all like the 40 to 60 yarders, and he was really good at it. So of course I tried it.
It's so hard.
Wasn't good at it. Yeah, so it's funny with that, and I feel like.
Did he use his right hand or his left hand?
I think he was a lefty. I don't know. It was very impressive. It was quite a show.
Well, because most people have to do that when they get the yips, and so it really helps with like your rhythm and your flow.
I think he was a right hander, and it was just one arm lefty.
That makes more sense. Yeah, so he probably has to do that. You see a lot of people chipping with just one hand if they have the yips and they can't seem to control it. Graham DeLette was doing that on tour because he had the chipping yips and he was doing some weird things with like letting it go one arm, doing one. It's hard. It's a little rough to see, but when you can do it, it feels so good. And that's actually a drill that I like to do is I'll hit shots with just my right hand and then I'll hit shots with just my left hand. You can really feel how like your hands are working through the ball. It's a really great drill. But yeah, Shaq was like, it was so impressive with one arm swings. Like the most impressive thing I've honestly ever seen because he just was hitting it so pure every single time and he'd put that left hand on and it like he couldn't make contact. For like the clubs, I was like, we need to get you some custom clubs. He's like, I don't play golf. I just like to hit my driver. So I think I'd probably have to get him like a pretty sick driver.
Yeah, you got to get something that's all tricked out that says Shaq on it, you know, that something is like just for him. I think that definitely has to happen. And I got to try some of these drills you're talking about, you know, one arms, two arms, no arms. There are times where I'm a little desperate in the chipping category.
Yeah, that's a really great drill. Again, it just like loosens your hands up and you can really see how the club is bottoming out at the bottom because you don't have the strength. So you're not like pulling up through it.
Yeah.
Your arm just literally has to fall through it. And you can see, yeah. you know, like if your hand's turning over and you can see the difference between like what your right hand has to do through impact and what your left hand has to do through impact. It really helps too with like rough shots if yes. you're in the rough. And sometimes I'll even like just chip a couple because you, again, you can just kind of like, with that shot, most people try to hit it so hard and that's why it just flies forever. But you don't really need that much power through it. You almost need to just like drop it on the back of it and it will pop out. And so with your right or left hand, when you're just doing, you know, individual arm shots, it just naturally happens that way. And so like that's the tempo and that's the flow because people aren't strong enough to hit it with the same force they do it to. So I love that drill. It's a great drill. And you have to do it with both arms too, though. So don't yeah. just do it with your right. Don't just do it with your left. You have to do both of them to kind of even out.
Sounds very tedious. Well, I am so excited to start playing golf. My plan was to play 9 holes on Friday, but I think it's going to be about 51 degrees here.
Oh, and no.
I still would. I would walk in 51 degrees, but I'm getting my second shot of the Moderna on Thursday. And I took a little Twitter poll. And a lot of people are saying, be prepared to kind of get your ass kicked. So it's probably not going to happen on Friday.
Both my parents are now fully vaccinated, which is great. But my dad didn't have any reaction to the second shot. And my mom, she had just like a little bit of a fever. But a lot of people I've talked to said they've been like knocked out after it, which is kind of scary. Like, I don't know how I feel about that. But that's exciting that you're going to be like fully vaccinated. And then once I'm fully vaccinated, we can go play golf and have beers and ginger ale,
exactly.
hot dogs. I can give you chipping lessons. It's going to be so much fun.
Can't wait. I've had so many of my Chicago friends. Hey, when's Paige going to play with us? I'm like, slow your roll, buddy. We will set up a great golf itinerary, but it's all TBD.
Well, that's exciting. Teddy, I want to thank you again for coming on. As always, you are the best. And for everyone listening, I hope you enjoyed this episode. We always appreciate the sport and everything that you do for us. And I won a Masters hat that Teddy is going to give to me. So maybe I might do a little giveaway with that. We will see. I know I said that last week, but it was a bit hectic with the Masters and everything that we were doing. So I'll see me what I can pull together for our little podcast family. But again, thank you guys as always for listening, supporting us, and you'll find us here next week.
Follow Playing Around with Paige Renee on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.